didn't move. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown. You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another tough loss here for the Eagles on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 28. Kicking off the show, we've got Greg Cosell and Chalk Talk, where this week, Greg and I are going to preview the New Orleans Saints, show what New Orleans has to offer on both sides of the football. Then I'm going to talk with Bo Allen in our two technique feature, talk with Bo about two gapping and how to take on a double team. You know, what is it like when you've got to deal with two offensive linemen at one time? And then we close out the show with Mark Weiser to break down some Georgia Bulldogs football after their tough loss to the Alabama Crimson Tide, a game that myself and my favorite guy in the room, BT, talked about last week. BT, we talked about in this very, very same spot last week.
Holy smokes.
Yes, about how every year Georgia has that game where everyone thinks that they're going to take the next step, and they're unable to go over the top.
I don't know what they call them, a test game, or you know, it's a check game, but that was a whooping.
Yes.
That was a donkey whopping.
No question about it. So we will talk some college football later on in the show with Mark, who did a great job and gives us some background there of the Bulldogs. But as we brought in BT, it's week five. We have gone through, we've got a couple road games in our belt. We've got our next home game coming here.
We're through the first quarter.
Yes, the first quarter, which is unbelievable that it's gone this fast.
Peter King said something in his article. He's like, can you believe we're 25% through the NFL season? I feel like preseason literally just ended.
Yeah,
I
mean, that was just your nightmare last night.
Right.
But, you know, right. With how that is for you. But obviously a tough loss here for the Eagles this past week in Washington. You were down at the game. You were down on the field. And no question, that was probably one of the tougher losses over the last couple of years, for sure.
Washington seems to be a bit of a bugaboo for us. Last couple of times I've been down there, have been some difficult losses. But, you know, we've got a rebound. You know, and everyone's kind of caught up what's wrong with this and that. And I think I'm a golfer. We golf sometimes in the offseason.
We do.
I think you just need to.
Well, you golf. I try.
I think you just got to go with the process. You can't always worry about the result of where the ball is going. So we've lost by a couple points in some games. We haven't looked great. But in all those games, we were still in the game. We haven't lost 42-0.
Right.
We haven't had that. So execution, get back to it, and try to get a win, get back to 2-3.
Yep, no question about it. All right, let's get into what the film guru himself, Greg Cosell, saw from last week's game, and then also jump into that Saints preview and Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me as he does each and every week, NFL Film senior producer Greg Cosell. Greg, as I just told BT a few minutes ago, it is week five.
Week five.
It is. We are already. We've already reached the quarter pole of the 2015 NFL season. It does not feel that way. In some ways, it feels like it's week 15 already, but.
Do we get a bye week, Fran?
We don't. No,
we don't. I didn't think so.
No, and you get less of one than I do. But it's it's crazy how fast it's going. Unfortunate that I don't think it's gone the way that we expected for the Eagles. Definitely through four games, as the Eagles sit at 1-3. Chip Kelly said it earlier this week that you know, they're a couple kicks away from being 3-1, and nobody's saying anything, but. Much like last year, and we talked last year, and the Eagles were, I believe, they were 3-1 at this point a year ago. They may have been 4-0 actually. I'm trying to think of what that fourth game was. I know they were. They definitely started 3-0, but we talked at this point last year. There were issues on that team, and even though they were 3-1, some of that was masked a little bit by some of the defensive touchdowns and special teams. And short. You know, you had there were opportunities there where you know kind of got masked a little bit. So this isn't unfamiliar territory, but I think that the team has shown the ability in the past to rebound. Now the question is, moving forward, can they do that this year? Because it is a different year, it's a different team. Can this team rebound, regroup, and move forward?
You know, one thing I've learned, I've been doing this a long time, Fran, as you know, and everybody always wants to know what's going to happen in the future. And all you can do is look at what's happened on film.
Right.
Do the Eagles have the ability, theoretically, to turn this around quickly? I've seen it happen many times in the NFL where teams that look like they are terrible all of a sudden start playing well for any number of reasons. And in fact, I really believed, and I know you felt the same way, that if they had won the game against Washington, even with all the concerns that still cropped up, that that could have been a season-defining game.
Right.
But obviously they lost. So what it does is it just brings out all the issues even more that they now still have to get over, but they don't have the buttress of a winning game to help them do that.
Right, exactly. And you know, you look at the offense, and it's been a lot. It's a lot of the same issues that we've talked about. And we don't need to talk about. Obviously, there's been inconsistencies at certain spots along the offensive line at different points. It's not just one person or one play scheme or anything. I mean, it's literally one play. It could be player A. The next play, it could be player B. The next play, it could be player D. I mean, it's all over the place. And offensively, they're struggling to get going. I talked in my column this week about the issues on third down and how that relates to the issues on first down. You don't get if you get 2 yards a play on first down, you're working in third and long consistently, you're not going to convert all the time. So
no, you're right. And Bradford obviously is among the worst in the NFL as a third down quarterback right now. But and you may know this, I haven't necessarily charted this, but I would guess that they're first down yardage has not been very good.
Yeah.
That they've probably had a lot of plays that have either gone for no yards or negative yards, and they're always working behind the down. And this offense is built, every offense obviously is, but a tempo offense is most certainly built on gaining positive yards literally on every play.
Right. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. They're in the other room, but I put it in my column this week. I'm pretty sure the number was that it was 12 third down attempts. I want to say 8 of them were from 7 or more yards. So, I mean, that puts you, I mean, you're way behind the 8 ball.
Right. You know what? I'm going to research that tomorrow just for the season to take a look at all their third downs and how many were 7 or more yards.
Right. And it's interesting. You look conversely. I had somebody come in today. I'm trying to remember exactly who it was. One of the other producers came into my office and said, "Fran, what's going on defensively? You know, how come we can't get together?" I said, "I thought the defense played really, really well." And then I said, they couldn't get off the field on third down. And I said, "Well, yeah, the last drive, you know, there were some issues. You know, obviously there was a couple plays that were kind of fluky here and there. And look, give all the credit in the world to Washington because they had a game plan going in and they wanted to hit on a number of those quick hitters, a lot of the three-step game, got the ball out quickly, build the confidence of quarterback Kirk Cousins, and that worked pretty well. So, give credit to them. But the Eagles, I looked it up, they're 5th in the league on third down on defense.
Right.
I mean, the defense has played really, really well. I've gone through numbers in other areas, whether it was my column or on the Eagles Insider podcast, what they did against the run. Benny Logan.
He was dominant last week.
Unbelievable. It might have been his best game.
And you know who's a really good player? And again, maybe if he got more snaps, he wouldn't be the same player. But Vinnie Curry, every time he plays, he's a natural pass rusher. He can rush the quarterback. Now, because of injuries in the game against the Redskins, he had to play some 3-4 DN, which he's probably not really equipped to do, but he was forced into that role.
Yeah, and you got to give a ton of credit to that whole defensive line because going into the game, you're missing your third and fourth defensive linemen. You're losing Sed Thornton. You're losing Taylor Hart. Then in the early part of the first quarter, you lose Brandon Bear.
Yep.
And for a team that was on a unit that was on the field for 86 snaps, on that defensive front, you had Fletcher Cox, you had Benny Logan, you had Bo Allen, and you had Vinnie Curry, and that's it.
And you also lost Michael Kendricks at linebacker after what, 10 or 12 snaps.
And you didn't have Kiko already.
Yep.
You lost you didn't have Colt Anderson, and you lost Byron Maxwell. So you had injuries all over the place on defense. Those guys that played more snaps than they'd ever played at any point in the season. So, you know, the way that they played in that game, I know that everyone will remember that 90-yard drive, but, I thought it was a great performance by the defense. You know, it didn't, and everyone's asking right now, I'm getting blown up on Twitter, well, where's the pass rush? How come the pass, I think that the pass rush, you talked about already with Vinnie Curry, those guys are disruptive. It doesn't always result in sacks. I mean, and that's the thing, is it doesn't always end up with a sack of the
quarterback. Well, unfortunately, the dynamic for this team has been reversed because this is a team that's supposed to be built on offense running an awful lot of plays. Now, their defense, that means, will still play against a lot of plays, but the whole dynamic of a game changes when your offense is moving the ball and scoring. And right now, you have an offense that's doing a lot of three and out, and I remember talking to Bill Davis a couple of years ago, and he said, hey, the one thing you have to be prepared for when you play with a speed tempo offense is it's not three and out, it's three and in for the defense.
Right.
And they get back in a little too quickly. But I think when you really look at the probably the number one issue, and it's really hard to succeed in the NFL, particularly when you have a pocket quarterback, the number one issue for this team, I think, has been the play of the offensive line through 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think with that being not up to par, it's obviously impacted the run game, but it's also impacted the pass game in that Sam Bradford's been an uncomfortable, unsettled player. He's not going to bail you out of situations like a Russell Wilson does, and he's playing behind a poor offensive line as well, but he can bail you out. Sam's not going to do that. So what happens is their offense gets shut down, and it's just too hard.
Yeah, and it's a snowball effect because, you know, we've talked in the past, let's say first down, there's a missed block in the run game, and it's a one-yard gain instead of what could have been a 4 or 5 yard gain. So now you're second and nine, and now Sam Bradford drops back, and there's an untimely drop. Okay, so now it's third and nine. The defense tees off, and it's a sack, three and out. But all these things compound when you've got less opportunities to run plays. So, you know, you have drops, you have missed assignments in the blocking game, whether it's in pass protection or in the run game. All these missed opportunities lead to more opportunities for the opponents to gain yardage, put points on the board, and ultimately win the game.
And injuries are adding up on the O-line,
yes,
too.
Right, no
so
question.
So now you're going deeper, you know, in your depth, and obviously those guys are not as good. So, but I think that's where it starts, and I think that that's a real struggle. Now, the other interesting thing, and again, when a team's 1-3, and there's a fine line between making meaningful, significant changes and just staying the course because you think it might be execution issues. But one of the things I found very interesting about the Eagles this year, and I think it's much more so than in Chip's first 2 years, is this has become a predominant 11 personnel offense. I mean, which means that they have one back, one tight end, and three wide.
Right.
I believe on something like 87, 88% of their snaps, they've been in 11 personnel. And I think in an ideal world, and certainly the first four games have not been ideal offensively, but I think in an ideal world, Chip would like to play a lot more with two tight ends.
Right.
And he just, for whatever reason, maybe because there's been no flow or rhythm to this offense, he hasn't been able to get to what I think he wants to get to.
Yeah, and he talked about it this week, actually, because he was asked about DeMarco Murray's post-game quote saying that he wanted more carries. And he said, well, yeah, I mean, I think everybody wants more carries. We want more reps offensively because that allows us to get into more of what we want to do. I mean, if you've got 80 snaps on offense as opposed to 50, that's 30 more plays that you can run 12 personnel, that you can
right.
take deep shots down the field, that you can spread the ball around to different running backs. I mean, it all rolls into one another. Everything's connected. But, you know, obviously it's a lot of different things you want to get changed. You talked about the offensive line. We will see how that goes moving forward. But on to Sunday's game against New Orleans, a team that's really interesting. Another 1-3 team. You know, you look at this offense. Drew Brees is back in the lineup. He had a good game on Sunday night against the Dallas Cowboys. They did us a favor getting a win. and, you know, you look at just what they've become. I guess the big question, and this was probably one of the bigger storylines this offseason, was what will this offense look like without Jimmy Graham? And how will they change schematically? What will it look like? And has it been a surprise to you how they've looked?
Well, they started out the season. I didn't think they played really well on offense, and they had no speed. They had Brandon Cooks and really nothing else because C.J. Spiller, who they signed, was injured, and they really didn't have another complement to Brandon Cooks, who was their only receiver with any kind of juice. Now, as Brees missed a game, obviously, but he came back last week, and this is a different-looking defense now, a different-looking offense, excuse me. Spiller's back. Willie Snead, who came from Ball State,
right.
who I remember watching on film. Keith Denning was the quarterback at Ball State,
yeah.
and Willie Snead was his receiver, and he was an undrafted free agent. He's now taking significant snaps away from Brandon Coleman from Rutgers because Coleman can't run really well at all. He's just a big body.
Right.
So now, all of a sudden, in addition to Cooks, They've got Snead and Spiller. And Spiller is a really fascinating player to have to defend because he can line up pretty much anywhere in your offense. He can be split. He's detached. He can be in the backfield. So he's a very interesting player. So this is a different Saints offense than if you haven't really, if you didn't really take note of them last week. I'm sure a lot of people did because they were a national TV game. But if you didn't, this is different than they were the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and what it was, I guess this is kind of what I expected was you lose Jimmy Graham and that vertical element and what he, they, you know, all those wheel routes, those post wheels, and the three level stretch. They were such a big 3-level stretch team, and I guess you
not doing as much of that.
Not doing as much of that, and I guess I kind of, I guess that can be two pronged, right? Because you lose Kenny Stills, you lose Jimmy Graham, and I think there's been questions about Drew Brees' arm strength as well, and you know what has been the change there over the course of the last couple of seasons, but. You know, you go back to really what this team was when Brees first got there. You know, you had Darren Sproles, and you had such a big screen effect in this offense. And you see that now. You see the receiver screens and the screens with the running back. A lot of those simple three-step West Coast schemes that, honestly, that we saw this past week with the Washington Redskins, you know, they run a lot of those high-low reads. It's very it's not basic, but they run a lot of those simple three-step concepts. Just to get the ball in the playmaker's hands.
And one of the things that I think is replacing some of the things they did in the past is they've gotten the running back on the wheel route in their offense.
And that was a huge Darren Sproles thing when he was there.
Yeah, but now that's been back. And I noticed it in the preseason. They threw it to Ingram quite a bit. They've thrown it to Ingram during the season.
Right.
And now that Spiller's there, it certainly works with him. So that's an element of their offense that they sort of had moved away from in recent years. Because they had Graham and they did a lot more of the three-level stuff, which was really effective. But I think now that's a particular part of their offense that you have to take note of. But you mentioned Brees' arm, and I thought that he had a throw, and I know you watched the tape. He had a throw in the first quarter on 3rd and 11 to Willie Snead.
Right.
An out route. Do you remember the throw?
Yep.
I mean, that was a big-time throw, far hash to the opposite sideline.
That's what you want.
And
man.
that was, I mean, he's not a gun. He never was. But he made that throw fairly easily.
Sure, and he's always been known for his ball placement, his ability to work within the pocket, and you know,
and had a couple of plays like that this week where you saw the explosive lower body movement within the pocket and the ability to then snap off a throw quickly.
Right, no question about it. And there, one of the other things I noticed too that I like that they do schematically, and I saw it more early than I have in the past couple of weeks, and maybe that could be with the onset of Snead here as the wide receiver. He's actually the leading receiver in terms of yardage on this team right now, but they would line up in 11 personnel with the three receivers and one back, one tight end. They'd put Brandon Cooks off as the X receiver, and they'd line up in bunch with Ben Watson, the tight end, and Coleman and Colston as the two point men there in the bunch. So you almost have like a run pass element there. You've got three big bodies to one side that you can run behind, and you know they did a lot of those sweep plays to one side. But you also have the pass element there with a solid receiving tight end in Ben Watson and two big receivers there in Colston and Coleman.
Yeah, and again, moving forward, we'll see how much they use Coleman, who sort of the last couple of weeks hasn't been as big a factor in terms of number of snaps because of Snead, because I think they realize that speed right now is a little more important to them than the big body.
Sure.
But they certainly haven't used the tight end as much. I mean, I kind of like Hill, the tight end.
Right.
I thought he might be a guy. I'm not saying he's Jimmy Graham, but I thought that he could at least catch some passes. They haven't used him a whole lot. They haven't thrown to him a whole lot. But he's got some athleticism to him.
Yeah, no question about it. And I always love changing gears to the defense. I always love watching a Rob Ryan defense just because schematically, and, you know, the numbers are kind of, you know, they're different year to year. It's interesting just kind of seeing the fluctuation there. But just the different things that they do schematically. I remember when we were preparing for that playoff game a couple years ago in 2013, they played not just snaps of nickel and dime, but then also those dollar defenses with seven defensive backs and all those different safeties and just the interchangeable defensive backs there and obviously the different designer blitzes and things like that. But it's not necessarily what you see now.
No, and it'll be interesting to see if he kind of whips out some designer blitzes this week for two reasons: the struggles with the O-line, and Bradford is a little unsettled in the pocket right now because he certainly has them in his playbook. And, you know, he's going to take a look at the Redskins last week, who didn't blitz a ton, but I know you remember this play. They did some interesting things. I remember the play where they had Robinson in the he was one of the A-gap guys. I forget who he's next. And because the Eagles don't really audible, and once they set the protection, as Kelsey did, they moved Robinson out,
and Kerrigan
kind of walked in and replaced him, and they caught the Eagles.
Yep.
Because they don't reset things, they snap the ball. And I think that's the kind of play where Rex Ryan's going to look at that and think there'll be opportunities here to attack their protections, break down their protections, and make Sam Bradford uncomfortable.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, it's always interesting seeing how they try to create pressure. One thing I love, and this is one of my favorite things about watching opposing film leading up to each Eagles game, is seeing how the young players, the guys from the rookie class, either from this past season or from the season before, they play a ton of rookies on defense. I mean, you've got Stephon Anthony, who was the first-round pick, who they got.
Who's a good player and going to be a very good player.
He's playing. He's all over the place.
Kikaha is not a bad pass rusher, by the way.
Leading tackler, leading sacker right now is Kikaha. And, you know, you've got on the back end, Damian Swan is playing a lot of snaps, a guy that I liked out of Georgia.
How about Delvin Bro?
Delvin Bro from CFL. They've got on the defensive line, you got Bobby Richardson from Indiana, a guy I liked.
Remember we talked about him?
We talked a lot about
him. And I liked him coming out, and I think he was undrafted.
He was a 3-4 DM, but we kind of saw him as a penetrating type, and he's kind of playing that role now.
It's funny because they play a lot of 3-4. Their base defense is a ton of 3-4 under and 3-4 over fronts.
Right.
So he often is lined up essentially more inside. He's not really an edge player.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you look at him, you know, Tyler Davison from Fresno
State.
That's
right.
I mean, they play Kasim Etabali from Boston College. I mean, they play, I think I counted, it was like 6 or 7 rookies on the defensive side of it all alone. Really, really interesting just to see how they use those guys. They move Kikaha all over the place. Sometimes he's, you know, he's listed as the starting Sam linebacker, and you'll see him lined up over the tight end. But, you know, they get into nickel, and sometimes he's in the A-gap. Sometimes he's in a three-point stance at the end. It's just really interesting to see all those movable parts.
Yeah, so it's a young defense. It's a defense that'll probably have its ups and downs. It probably is a defense that you can attack. But, again, they can also get you because I think Rex – and I think the key thing is – and it's Rob, excuse me. Rob Ryan will see who he's playing against this week. And all you can do, as I said earlier, is look at the film up to this point, and clearly he's going to look at an Eagles offense that's struggling in just about every area.
Right.
And I think he's going to be a little more aggressive maybe than he might otherwise be.
Sure. So we'll be very, very interesting here as that game comes closer. And we have a lot more to break down here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. So,
well, let's hope for a win.
Let's hope so. So Greg Cosell of NFL Films, I appreciate the time once again here on Chalk Talk.
Thanks, Fran.
Great stuff there from Greg. I really enjoy having him here in studio each and every week. I loved what he said, too, about how the offense there has transformed a bit with Jimmy Graham out of the picture. And I think that's been one of the big storylines this offseason leading up to this fall was how that offense would look. So really good stuff from Greg. Before we continue on with the show, though, BT, what's the latest from our friends over at iTunes? How are the listeners out here? Are the people showing us some love?
Yeah, they are, actually. We have MikeCheck1212, which I think is a great handle, but wrote
on
Stitcher. Great show. Love listening to Fran. Great insight, as always. Greg Cosell is a must-listen each week. Love hearing you guys talk to players and two technique. Great stuff. So just got to give us your feedback. I love hearing what people like in the show, especially like two technique. I think that's one, you know, I keep hammering every week, but I think that's one thing where you get kind of an unabated look at what the players think about a certain scheme in this net. So send us your comments, send us what you like, what you don't like, and we'll try to tailor it to what you guys want.
No question about it. And the great thing is, too, if you give us some love, we give you some love. We give you a shout out on the podcast.
That's the thing. We try to give you a handle, try to let you know that we're listening. We're not just saying this stuff like, hey, give us comments, and then we never check it. So, you know, if there's certain players you guys want to hear from in two technique, if there's a certain topic that you want Fran and Greg to hit on in Chalk Talk, just give us a shout.
You better believe, too, that there's some competitiveness between myself and Chris McPherson, between the Eagles Insider Podcast and Eagle Eye in the Sky, and the Journey to the Draft, which did return this week. If you are a fan of college football and the NFL Draft, go and check that out. We went up on Sunday morning, and you can expect that every Sunday from now until the end of the regular season.
I plan to give that a listen. I was out in Washington, so I didn't get it. I know you guys did it Sunday morning, game day, so I plan to listen to it on my car ride home.
And the good thing is that it's really, I mean, you could, we filmed it on Sunday morning. You could listen to this on Friday. You could really, and honestly, you could listen to it a week from now, because we talk about, you know, even though it's, there's some topical discussion, but mostly it's, hey, you know, what does this player bring? What does that player bring? We talked about a ton of guys, and we went a good amount of time. So we fit a lot of players into the discussion, all Eagles-related draft talk, but, you know, talked about some prospects in general as well. So really good discussion there. But let's keep this podcast going. Let's get into my discussion here with Eagles nose tackle Bo Allen and taking on a double team.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
All right, here now with Eagles nose tackle Bo Allen. And Bo, today I want to just talk about taking on a double team and handling a double team. What's the first thing that goes to your mind when you're lining up and you feel like a double team could be coming your way?
I think the biggest thing is you just got to focus on one guy. As soon as you spread your hands or try to focus on both guys coming at you, then it's over. You just got to pick one guy and focus your strike on him, and then you're golden.
Is it tougher for the power run game as opposed to an outside zone game where, you know, they're trying to double team you and you have to worry about maintaining your gap as well?
I mean, as a defensive lineman, you want to get those double teams. That means they respect you and they're trying to block. They can't block you with one guy. So that's what you want.
Great stuff from Bo Allen there. Easily one of the brighter personalities on the team. I know you guys have done some features with him, BT. And definitely one of the highlights in the roster in terms of personality.
Yeah, we did a feature with him where he was a salesman at a Bob's Discount Furniture.
That's right.
And it's interesting to see what is he, 6'3", 6'4",
something along those
280,
lines.
I don't know. Oh, he's a big dude.
He's like 330.
Seeing a big dude like that sell leather couches is pretty funny. So it's up
the
on
image
our website.
Of him laying on
out.
That. The image of him laying on the bed with his arms crossed was good.
And then the guy's like, "What will it take to put you in this thing?" He's like, "Just give it to me for free." He's like, "You got it, free sold." He just walks away. So it's interesting to see some guys' personalities when they're not playing. And Bo's a big personality on the field and big one off it as well.
No question. Well, Bo did such a good job of explaining to you guys how to take on a double team. So I want to show you how to subscribe to a podcast. So, you know, all you have to do is just go on your phone, that fancy schmancy smartphone of yours, and you just go to your native podcast app. You search for the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. You hit subscribe, and the show shows up on your phone every week. You can listen whenever you want. You can listen when you're microwaving your dinner at night. You can listen when you're walking the dog. You can listen when...
I wish I had a dog to walk, because I would walk a lot longer if I was listening to a podcast. I would just keep going.
Well, you're a Fitbit person, right?
I am a Fitbit person.
That's right. Got to get those steps in. So while you get your steps in, you can listen to some quality content here with the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, the Eagles Insider, the Journey to the Draft, or if you want to continue listening to college football, get the College Draft podcast in with myself and Ross Tucker. But while we're on the discussion of college football and the NFL draft, let's keep it going. Let's wrap the show up here with Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
Joining me this week on Saturday Scouting, Mark Weiser from the Athens Banner-Herald. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Weiser. Mark, I appreciate the time this morning. I wanted to bring you in to pick your brain about some of the top prospects from this Georgia Bulldogs football team. And we'll start in the backfield. Everyone wants to talk about Nick Chubb, obviously, and what he will bring, but he is not draft eligible. Sony Michel in that backfield as well is in the same boat. But you have another guy there, a senior in Keith Marshall, who came up with Todd Gurley, made an impact as a true freshman, has had some injury concerns. But when you look at those three guys, who is kind of the lead dog there in terms of keeping the rest in line and leading that position room?
Good question. You would assume that Keith would be because he's a senior, but I'm not sure that's the case because he was, you know, not really playing too much the last two seasons. Nick Chubb doesn't really have that personality, but given what he's doing on the field, I think he's kind of assumed that role anyway. And he did show some leadership a couple weeks ago when Georgia was surprisingly having a hard time running the ball in the first half against a Southern team from the FCS. He kind of rallied the offensive line at halftime and basically challenged them to you know start asserting themselves, and they did in the second half of that game. So I would say Nick probably has that role you know by default just because he's the man really in terms of production.
And then how has Marshall responded really to, you know, obviously you need a lot of resilience to come back from the kind of injuries that he's come back from. What has he been like to deal with from your perspective? And do you see him as a guy that the arrow is pointing up for his career, looking as he moves forward to the NFL?
Yeah, it's been a tough road for him because he came in, more highly touted from the recruiting circles than Todd Gurley even. They both were from different parts of North Carolina, but they both came in the first month of the season, were very productive. There was they had the nickname Gershel for them, comparing their production to what Herschel Walker might have done as a freshman. But Keith Marshall had tore his knee up at Tennessee in 2013, was out for the season. Came back in 2014, played the first three games of the season, and injured the knee again. It wasn't as serious an injury, but they took it slow with him. Decided it wasn't worth bringing him back, so he took a red shirt. Has 2 years of eligibility actually remaining, but my guess is he will leave after this year. He hasn't said that. We'll see how that plays out. He's a guy that's really in a tough spot in terms of getting carries because he's behind two guys that are very productive. We'll see how he does. I think he has NFL potential. He might be a guy that could land on a roster and have a chance to contribute. Even if he doesn't have tons of carries at Georgia.
And then sharing that backfield with those three guys, the newcomer there in the backfield, starting quarterback Grayson Lambert, transferred from Virginia. I can remember watching Lambert in that opener last year in the 2014 season against UCLA and some of the throws he was able to make. Is obviously off to a hot start so far in 2015. What has Lambert done to kind of assimilate himself into the culture of that program? And was it really impressive to you to see that guy come in and take the starting job, even though he's only there just for a few weeks?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from leaving Virginia as a guy that had been bumped down to the number two spot after spring practice and had more interceptions than touchdowns as a starter in 2014, you didn't know exactly how he would factor in. There was some thought that they just brought him in as needing another scholarship quarterback. They had a guy that was third in the pecking order that left, so they needed another guy to help out there. But Lambert came in mid-July to summer school, but had been making some trips down on weekends to get a little bit of work in with some of the receivers. He's from Georgia. He just absorbed everything really fast, showed maturity, seemed to bond very well with the offensive lineman in particular right away, and was named a surprise starter at the end of August. It was a little bit shaky to start the season, particularly in Vanderbilt, where he was 0-for-5 in the first half, but then set an NCAA record against South Carolina with completion percentage 24-of-25. Next week only had a one incompletion either in 10 attempts. He looks the part. I mean, he's the tallest starter Georgia's had at quarterback in at least 50 years. He's what you would want in terms of the makeup. We'll see, the rigors of the SEC, how good he really is.
Who would you say, Mark, is the leader of that offensive unit? Whether it's in the backfield, is it out wide? A guy like Malcolm Mitchell, who's been around for it seems like forever down there in Georgia, or one of these guys along the offensive line. Who would you say is probably the leader of that unit?
I think it's probably a shared responsibility. I'm not sure there's a clear-cut guy. In the past years, it had been the starting center, whether it was David Andrews, who was an undrafted free agent and now starting for the Patriots. Ben Jones was a four-year starter, now with the Houston Texans, starting on their offensive line. This year, it's probably a combination of John Theus, Colton Houston, Malcolm Mitchell, guys that have been around the program for a long time. Colton Houston is a six-year guy. He got had an issue with the NCAA that kept him ineligible for the first three seasons, this is his second full-time year as a starter.
Much like Marshall, Malcolm Mitchell's a guy that has had some injuries or had some injury issues. He started on the defensive side of the football as a corner, is now a full-time wide receiver, has definitely developed in that area, as a route runner and with his hands and things like that. But off the field, how much do the coaches rely on him?
Yeah, Matt Mitchell is a different character. Georgia's had some really unique guys, especially at the wide receiver position with Chris Conley, the guy that was drafted by the Chiefs, I think, in the third round. And Matt Mitchell is in the same boat. When Matt Mitchell had an ACL injury, celebrating a Todd Gurley touchdown of all things against Clemson in the 2000 2013 opener. You know, he was off the field for a while and really became a voracious reader. He said he had a lot of difficulty reading before he got to Georgia. Still made it, through the system, obviously got to Georgia, but ended up joining a women's book club and got a lot of national attention for that. These are middle-aged women, maybe in their 40s and 50s. And Mitchell wrote a children's book this off-season called The Magician's Hat. So he's gone around the community, read to elementary school children. While you're thinking that his story would just be about what he did off the field, because he really wasn't that productive last year as he came back from that knee injury, he really looks like the old Malcolm Mitchell that was a big-time playmaker as a freshman and sophomore. And as you mentioned, Georgia needed him to help out in the secondary when they had some off-field issues, lost some guys. But Mitchell's definitely become the go-to guy for Grayson Lambert. Throw the ball up in his direction, he seems to be able to make plays in the air.
Switching gears here to the defensive side of the football, when it's around time for the NFL draft, everyone's looking for those high-character guys, the team captains, and people will hang your hat on a prospect and say, hey, he's a team captain as a senior. Every once in a while you get a guy that was, he was a team captain for 2 years. It's very rare that you come across a guy that was a captain for 3 seasons, and that's what you have in Jordan Jenkins, the pass rusher there for Georgia. Does saying that he was a three-time team captain, is that enough? Is that underselling it with what kind of a character he is?
When you say three-time team captain, I guess you're talking about Georgia names team captains on a weekly basis, I'm not sure if I kept up on that as much as I should, but he does seem to have. It's kind of a combination of what you do off the field and what you do on the field that they name those captains, and he's definitely been special in that regard. The coaches have described him as a very solid guy. You know what you're going to get. He lines up properly. Mark Rick said, he's going to play hard. He's going to play with good assignment, good discipline. It was a little bit of a surprise that none of some of the guys you mentioned on the defensive side that were being pegged as early round pick as a draft eligible underclassman left. Jordan Jenkins came back, Leonard Floyd came back, and that's really boosted Georgia's pass rush. Jenkins, whether he'd be the guy, I guess he'd be one of the guys on the defensive side that is that kind of standout leader around the locker room.
When I think of Georgia right now and I'm trying to decide who is the top prospect for this year's draft or for the 2017 draft in terms of eligibility, the first name that comes to mind is Leonard Floyd. You talked about him already. He was an outside linebacker last year, shifted inside to inside linebacker this summer. Still sees some reps as a pass rusher, and he's absolutely, in my opinion, that's what he is at the next level. Just really dynamic playmaker, great athlete for the position. What is he like away from the field?
You talk about Jordan's leadership. Leonard is not as outspoken, a little bit more reserved, and Georgia decides which players are going to be made available to the media on a weekly basis. And Jordan Jenkins clearly has the approval of coaches in that regard because he's always among the weekly guys. Leonard, a little bit more reserved, as I mentioned, and so he doesn't really have as much interaction with the media, but when he has, he's engaging. He's got a good personality. He might actually be a little bit more, both Jordan and Leonard will tell you what they think. They're not too filtered in that regard, which as a media member, you like them to be upfront and frank about things. But Leonard, dealt with a shoulder injury, missed the bowl game last year. And so, if he did have a decision to make about the NFL draft, I think that brought him back for sure because he wanted to be healthy, have to go through the combine and, draft evaluations. Been one of their top tacklers this year, as you mentioned. They've been using him at inside linebacker. He could play the star position. He was an outside linebacker his first couple years, so he definitely gives you a lot of flexibility. NFL teams can decide where they project him, he's got some skill sets as a rangy guy that can fit in a lot of places.
Mark Weiser from the Athens Banner-Herald, I appreciate the time once again here on Saturday Scouting. We will talk to you soon.
Okay, good to be with you. Thank you.
Great stuff there from Mark. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at Mark Weiser. And while you're at it, I'm at FWE3. Give me a follow. If you like what you're hearing on this podcast, I tweet out all the links to this one, all the other podcasts I'm a part of, the Eagle Eye in the Sky column, a lot more. So be sure to go and check that out. We'll talk some football.
So we had a conversation last week about some guys to watch. There were a couple big games last week.
Yes, and a lot of big games last week.
The Clemson-Notre Dame game I watched while I was down there. Obviously, the Georgia-Alabama game ended up being not
well,
as...
Well, see, you lucked out. See, you had a day in the hotel with great college football games. I was at the Jets game last week, 2 weeks ago, with not a great slate.
It's
I
all
was
about
stuck,
the timing.
I was stuck watching Syracuse-LSU with Barletto. With
Leonard
one of
Fournette.
our Syracuse alumni.
Barletto is a huge Syracuse
right.
guy.
So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But, yeah, I mean, you lucked out. You had a great slate of games.
So what's on tap this week? Any good matchups?
Yeah, there's some good matchups. And not as many big games as last week. But I think there's some interesting one-on-one matchups. You know, I talked about a bunch of them on the college draft with Ross Tucker. And we had Eric Galco, who we know from Optimum Scouting. We've done a lot of stuff with Eric, whether it's on the Journeys of the Draft or down at the Shrine Game in the Senior Bowl. But I would say if I had to pick three matchups that we'll just feature here on this show, I'd look at NC State quarterback Jacoby Brissett, who, I'll tell you what, reminded
big
me.
Dude.
Big dude. Athletic. Strong. I mean, I think he shows some accuracy. He shows the ability to move around in the pocket
Rohan
a little
Davey.
Bit. No, you know who he actually reminds me of? A little bit. You're gonna like fall out of your seat. He reminds me a bit of Five.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
Just in the style of his
just
style.
Just talking about him earlier today.
There
wow.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Donovan McNabb.
Quickness?
Yeah, dude. So the play that he made last year, if you haven't heard this, you know, seen this play, just go on and Google Jacoby Brissett touchdown Florida. Florida State. The touchdown that he threw against Florida State, he shook off like three tackles, rolled to his right, and hit a guy in the back of the end zone for a touchdown. It was one of the best individual plays I saw all of last season.
He kind of reminded me, I watched some plays last season. I'm like, this is a big, you know, I don't want to go Jarrett Lorenzen. I'm not trying to make an indictment on this guy, but he's a big
he's
dude.
He's a big
quarterback.
Dude.
I was just like,
but he
really,
can run.
I was really taken aback. I saw him move, and he's not like this guy, but he does it in the similar manner of, like, Antonio Gates is not fast.
Right.
But he
runs unbelievable
routes. And he's just like, how is this guy open? And he just kind of – and I was watching him just scramble, and he scrambles with a purpose to get yards, to put himself in better position to throw. So I didn't – you know, you see a guy on a couple games, you can't – I mean, sometimes you can tell if a guy translates. But I didn't really know what his skill set, and I'm interested to actually watch some more of him and see if he is like our little friend Five.
Yeah, I mean, he's intriguing, and I haven't studied him yet this year, and from people that I've talked to, they said that he's looked good. You know, and I was intrigued. There were a lot of good things. There were some bad things last year on tape. Under pressure, I thought, you know, I was a little worried. But this year they've played four games, and they haven't played anyone of circumstance. They play Virginia Tech this week, and they've got a good front seven. Unfortunately, Kendall Fuller is out, and it sounds like he's out for the season, but they've got some other corners, some other defensive backs on that team that are quality, and this is the first real test going up against the Bud Foster defense of Virginia Tech. So excited to see Brissett. But the other two, Tyler Boyd, a guy we've talked about from Pittsburgh, the wide receiver, reminded me a little bit of Odell Beckham. We've talked about that, and I'm not saying he's Odell Beckham, but reminds me of him a little bit. Going up against Virginia corner Maurice Kennedy, we saw Kennedy play against Notre Dame, and the game that he had there was very, very disruptive, was very active, can play inside, can play in the slot, as well as outside, and he's got good size and good movement. And then we talked about him already, Leonard Fournette, the running back from LSU, who's just been outstanding, is probably the front runner at this point to win the Heisman. Going up against South Carolina, look, South Carolina is not a great team this year, but they've got a linebacker there, a junior in Sky Moore, who's a little bit undersized, but this kid is instinctive. He's really quick, and he's physical. So I like Sky Moore. This will be a good test for him. I think it's more so for Moore than it is for Fournette. I think he's got a chance to kind of put himself on the national stage. So excited about those three.
I have to check him out. I didn't get a chance to see Redmond last week. I was actually really, really excited to want to check him out. But we were out at dinner with stuff with the Eagles. Didn't get a chance to check it out. I saw, like I said, I saw a little bit of the Notre Dame game. It was an ugly game because of the water and the weather and all. So, but I want to see this Taj Boyd kid. I mean, I've heard you talk. I saw him last year.
Or Tyler Boyd.
Tyler Boyd.
The receiver from Pitt.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You made a reference last week to ODB. And I saw him last year, but I don't like to go off one sampling.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, you need
absolutely.
To see, and I like to see a guy grow over the years. So,
I thought Odell Beckham was more explosive. He was a better route runner. So, like I said, I think that there, you know,
there's some traits.
Beckham is better.
Right.
Beckham was a better prospect, But Boyd is very good. He's very, very good. And a receiver class that isn't as strong isn't as last year or the year before, I think he's probably going to be, if he decides to come out, and obviously he's a junior, so he may not even, you know, he may not come out for the NFL. He may stay another year. If he decides to come out, I would imagine he'd be one of the best receivers. So, cool. Very good stuff there. I'm excited about.
I'm excited to watch Brisket this week. That's what I'm gonna give you. My scouting report next week.
There we go. I'm excited to hear it. So, thanks again to Greg, to Bo, to Mark, and all of you guys out there listening. Whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Podbay, and of course PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the time, go on, rate the show, leave us a comment. Again, it's the best way to support the show. Let us know what you think. Shoot me a question. I want to hear from everybody out there so we can keep making the show better each and every week. Really appreciate all of you out there that spread the word on Twitter and Facebook and Reddit and all forms of social media. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another week in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.